Welcome to Mecha Do About Nothing, the only mecha podcast where one host shoots the other at the end. I'm your host, Ian Gregory.
And I'm your shot host, Daniel Forziat.
Yeah, I almost said, I'm the one doing the shooting.
Well, I figured that's the direction this was going to go in. So,
this week we wrapped up season one of Old Noah Zero. So that was episodes 7 through 12.
Yes.
What an ending. Wow, this is a show that happened.
It's why I was like, yeah, this is not a show we can split the seasons because I think
could not
it will
imagine
take away
from doing the ending of season one and then immediately being like, well, moving on to all of our questions being
six
answered.
6 months later, all of these people, you know, it's like, oh, okay. Oh. which makes this, like you said before, you're like, I don't know if I want to give 4 weeks to Old Noah Zero. And you're probably right. But it's like, oh, we can't do it in three. And like, I really don't want to do it in
we
two.
We had plenty to say last week just on the first six, just on the setting, right? And I think we'll have plenty to say this week on how this ended. What my question is when we get to season two, will we be bored with the first part of it? Like, could we have knocked out season two in one episode?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
We'll find out when we get there.
Yeah, next week.
Also, a reminder to the listeners that Dan has seen this show before and I have not. So Dan's going to have to, you know, lie a little here.
Yes.
Or I'm just not going to ask direct questions.
What happens? I don't know.
Should I just do this summary and we should just roll into it? I've got nothing else to say right
go
now.
Go for it.
Slane arrives and assists our crew against the Martian cataphract. This is the one that splits off into like six arms or whatever, and the
becomes
arms
a
become single a
single
molecule.
Yeah. And they say it again.
They double down on the single molecule explanation. It's not even going to be in the mech corner. I refuse to talk about it. During the fight, a hidden dock is revealed on Tanegashima Island, which the ship escapes into while Inaho holds off the enemy. Inside, they find the ruins of a Martian cataphract from 15 years ago, as well as a flying ship. Inaho boards Slane's craft, and they cooperate to destroy the flying hands. However, they are almost completely destroyed, but are saved by the arrival of the flying ship Deucalion, which was activated by a now-revealed Asylum. The Martian Knight is defeated, and Inaho and Slane briefly talk. Inaho fears that Slane is working with the Martians to recapture Asylum, so he shoots him down, though he survives. Slane is recaptured by Crudio and tortured as part of an interrogation. Slane eventually reveals that Asylum is alive, shocking Crudio, and he orders a ceasefire so that they can find the conspirators behind the assassination. Before he can, however, the Martian Knight Sazbom attacks Crudio's castle, killing him, destroying it, and capturing Slane. Inaho and Asylum grow closer. Riot, the daughter of the spies, suffers from PTSD while going through training simulations, and Marito undergoes exposure therapy of his own. Sazbom later admits to Slane that he wanted the princess killed in order to restart war with Earth, in order to reform the Verse Empire, especially due to his hatred of the Imperial family. Sazbom's fiancé was killed during the ill-fated attack on Earth 15 years ago that resulted in the moon being destroyed. He says he agrees to spare Slane because of a debt he owes his father. On the Deucalion, Riot strangles Asylum, knocking her out and disabling the old Noah drive on the ship. Inaho revives Asylum with CPR, and Riot threatens everyone and then herself with a gun before being stopped. She's put in the brig. The Deucalion arrives at UFE headquarters in Russia, and Asylum attempts to broadcast her plea for peace. However, Sazbom has already co-opted the satellite base she was using for the broadcast, so the message does not get out. Sazbom offers Slane the cataphract of Crudio, asking him to fight alongside him, or he allows him to escape to Earth but be considered an enemy. Sazbom's orbital castle attacks the UFE base, easily defeating most of the forces there. Asylum escapes with the Deucalion crew, and they plan to attack Sazbom Castle and have Asylum shut off his old Noah drives. They successfully make the attack but end up ramming the base with the Deucalion. Inaho fights against Sazbom, while Asylum rushes to the old Noah drive at the heart of the castle. Slane discovers he has the power to start Old Noah drives on his own, a power supposedly reserved for the Imperial family, and he launches in Crudio's cataphract. Inaho defeats Sazbom, but before he can kill him, Slane interferes, tackling Inaho's mech. Asylum manages to shut off the Old Noah drive right as Slane crashes through the wall with Inaho. Asylum runs over to Inaho to save him from his downed cataphract before she is shot repeatedly by Sazbom. Slane shoots Sazbom. Inaho realizes he loves Asylum, and then Slane shoots Inaho in the head. The post-credits scene tells us that the battle was a complete UFE victory, though at a high cost. Asalem's whereabouts are unknown, and we see a cataphract fly away from the scene. There you go. That's quite a lot. Think about this.
What if this was only this was it? There was like, what if there was no season two announced?
What if this series bombed hard and this was it? Right?
It's just like, that's the ending. It can't, honestly, it can't
that would be.
Be
so funny.
Because I think the funniest part about all of this is that was literally one Martian landing castle. And there's one got destroyed. But there's like 35 others.
Yeah. So yeah, there are 36 knights. So there are 35 others. Yeah. And another one got destroyed because Salzbaum killed Crudio.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't think they have a chance, but.
Man. What an ending. You're totally right that, like, wouldn't it be really funny if that was where it ended? And people had to wait, like, what, 6 months to find out what happened next?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's a heck of a cliffhanger. Considering you think that, like, three of the most important people in the show are shot dead at the end of this.
Yeah, we have, like, one main character left.
Yeah. Dan, what's your highlight?
The famous line, ready my cataphract, as Count Cruteo gets absolutely annihilated by a beam blast.
This is so funny. I love the scene because so Salzbaum is attacking the castle and Crudeo comes out and he sees the carnage and he's like, oh my God, Salzbaum's the conspirator. And he shouts, ready by cataphract. And he just gets beam sabered.
It's so funny because like, I think we'll talk about this a little later. Crudeo has like this revelation, like all the pieces fall into place, like at one moment, but it doesn't matter. Just he's done.
I love that it's like such a knight thing to be like, yeah. He's not going to get me now. He has to wait till I'm in my mobile suit. Like, no. It reminded me a lot, too, of that scene in Thunderbolt where the Zeon people are trying to detonate the ship and Carla is like, please don't do this. And then a GM just activates a beam saber on them, like from outside the ship, and it just drills them.
I forgot how good some of those scenes in Thunderbolt is. Because the best part is up until that point, that little guy's outside of the ship with like he's got like a little finder, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, he's trying to figure out where they are.
And he like points and then the beam saber goes, oh, it's such a good, like well thought out scene.
That was probably one of the best scenes in Thunderbolt, I think. It's really good.
It's horrific.
For me, I just like really liked, it's very simple. You know, the Sawano drop happens, but when the Deucalion first flies out and you see a Salem on the bridge, like glowing with magic power.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that's nice. I don't know. I like that scene a lot. I just was like, yeah. It felt good.
Yeah.
I also like that they finally had like a named ship so I can just call them the Deucalion instead of saying Inaho and Friends.
Inaho and Friends on a random aircraft carrier in the Pacific.
Yeah. Also, what's up with that secret dock on Tanegashima that's just like the treasure chest behind the waterfall situation?
Yeah.
Like, they bombed a wall and found a cave.
Of, like, the Red Ribbon Army underground base, underwater base. Where they're just like, oh, there's a whole base down here. Wow, crazy.
Is that General Blue, the psychic one? I forget which one that is.
I don't remember, actually.
You know, the Red Ribbon Army arc has mechs in it.
You know.
And Pilaf pilots a mech as well.
We could, like, do all of Dragon Ball.
All of a sudden, this becomes a Dragon Ball watch show.
I finished the whole Dragon Ball arc in Raw, in manga, recently.
Oh, in Japanese.
Yes. Nice. Like, I think I lied. I think I'm literally on the junior
World
Tournament arc.
Yeah, so great arc, too.
I'm, like, really close to the end. And then it becomes Z.
And then it becomes Z. Z's good, too, honestly.
Yeah.
Here's my annual plug to like read Dragon Ball if you've only seen it, because it's really good as a comic.
It is really good.
Yeah.
I also think it's really good as an anime though. So
But like people tend to, I think people underrate the manga as a result because the anime is so famous.
I mean, yeah, sure.
Not obviously this probably isn't true in Japan where it's like the second best selling manga of all time, but like, I don't know. I think American fans are so much more likely to only engage with the anime.
No, I 100% agree with that.
All right, let's get into our first discussion here. We've got a couple of topics here. We're probably gonna blow through until we get to the ending. First off, there's like a couple subplots here I've grouped them together for no reason. Romance and PTSD. First of all, this Inaho and a Salem thing. Do you buy this? Like,
I believe that the writers want us to believe that they are truly in love, but in my heart, I don't believe it. If that makes sense.
When does Inaho, like, obviously he like keeps her secret and they interact a little, but like not that much, right? There's not that many moments. I guess there's like two moments of them being cute together. One when he tells her that she's wrong about why the water and the sky are blue, and one when they talk about birds.
Yeah.
They got two total moments of like of cuteness together, and that's like the entire romance.
All right, I'm going to set up a scene for you, Ian. I think you can relate this to this a lot.
Uh-oh.
Remember like middle school when you had a crush?
I try not to.
Right? Doesn't matter who. But you remember like you had a crush, right? And it's like every time you'd see them like in the hallway walking something, there'd be like a little like flutter, right? You'd be like, oh, there they are, right? Oh, they're there. I think it's like a similar situation where they were already predisposed. And so I think that like it's sort of like the stars align, right?
Maybe if Inaho had expressed any emotion... He literally had to have his sister being like, he totally has a crush. And I was like, okay.
Here's the thing I don't like. I don't like how anime sometimes romanticizes, and I'm going to even go this far, sexualizes CPR. It's weird.
Oh, yeah. We have to talk about how that assassination scene took place between two naked teenage girls in the shower.
And then... That's one of, like, the flashback scenes that Inaho has when he, like, realizes he loves her.
Is the CPR?
He's, like, him doing CPR on her. And it's, like, that feels kind of gross.
It also feels out of character for Inaho, who clearly takes CPR very seriously.
Exactly.
Because even his sister literally, she's, like, where'd you learn that? He's, like, oh, in school. And she's, like, oh, but usually the kids are just giggling about kissing each other.
Which is accurate.
It's very accurate, but Inaho is like his personality type is that he takes all these lessons very seriously. So I don't know, the fact that you're right that he like romanticizes this thing in his flashback, and then there's the scene where Raya is just, I like this. She's like flipping around with her gun and her towel is just like staying glued on. I was like, all right, I understand that you can't show her naked, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah, I actually kind of do like that scene though. That's a little like grim, right? She's like walking over to the other stall, and it's like, oh my god, what's gonna happen?
They ended the episode on a good note, which is her dying, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it was a good moment
where you're like, oh whoa, like interesting. I wasn't convinced that a Salem's life was really at stake.
Yeah,
but it was a good moment for Riot to have anything to do in this show.
What if instead? Princess of Salem was like in a coma situation, and she had like minimal brain activity, and that's like they had to like keep her inside like of a tube somewhere, and that's the only way they could get the Deucalion to fly. That'd be dark, man. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, like an IBO situation. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, oh yeah, she's Ayn. Spoilers. She's Ayn inside of what's his name's mobile suit.
The old man?
No. You Crank? Know how Ayn becomes the Alaya Vinya system for...
Galio.
Yeah. It'd be like that.
Speaking of Riot, I remember last week I complained that we had no idea where she stood on anything, right? This week, it becomes very clear that she hates all Martians with a passion.
Yes.
That's good. It gives her like an actual direction as a character.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like that she's like, I have to kill the Martians, right? It's their fault. Especially it's a Salem's fault. It's a little weird to kill the person the Martians were trying to kill. Like logically, that doesn't make too much sense, but she's not a logical character, right? She's being driven by this fear and terror.
I feel like we get that a lot in the show. It's like people have a bit like aimless rage where they're like, why are you killing this person? Like,
there's a lot of it. Yeah. We'll get to that later. Yes.
But like you're saying, I do like how, and I think, I don't know how her name is actually pronounced. So it's either Riot or Rye.
Yeah.
But I do like how it's setting her up for what I assume season two is that she's going to be like a member of the strike force, right?
Yeah. By the way, Dan says, I assume, because Dan really doesn't remember anything about season two.
I watched it when it came out, and I only remember how crazy the ending of this season was, and I remember who's alive at the beginning of season two. I swear to God, I don't retain this stuff.
So, yeah, the one thing I don't buy is her immediate, like, cool person face turn, where she gets in the cataphract and is like, I'll save you, princess.
Oh, yeah.
That was just a bit much, right?
Mm-hmm.
Happened too quickly. I guess prison time really does reform you. You know, all those hours in the brig really taught her the meaning of human life. Shrug.
Didn't that happen to, like, Amuro, though? Right? He had the...
And Camille... How many other people got put in the brig? Didn't Camille get put in the brig for, like, letting a spy escape?
Oh, yeah, Sarah.
Sure. Was it Sarah? Yeah, it was Sarah.
Yeah.
Join us to rewatch Zeta Gundam on the show.
From memory. Okay, so...
If we were to rewatch any show, it would probably be the original Mobile Suit Gundam, just because that was our first episodes, and it was a real... learning process.
It would be really cool for us to go origin, do because we haven't done origin yet, do origin, yeah, into original Gundam. That'd be kind of cool again.
Yeah, or also, I mean, we could just read the origin manga, which also does it right.
The origin manga retells, goes all the way through.
It starts with where the anime starts, and the Char stuff is a flashback part way through.
That's right. It's, like, really odd.
So, but yeah, because with the OVAs, they only chose to adapt the flashback, the new content, essentially, which, yeah, I'm still mad about. But, or, Dan, we wait, what, 8 more years for the 50th anniversary?
And just hope it gets reanimated. I think it's pretty much confirmed that they're never going to do it, right? Which I kind of respect.
Yeah, I do too. Like, honestly, the original Gundam is still... It's good. Like, they don't need to redo it, but
yeah,
I kind of, like, want them to redo it.
Yeah, I just, like, good.
All right. Somehow we always manage to go off on tangents about Gundam during non-Gundam shows.
Yeah.
But our other PTSD sufferer here is Marito, who's the older lieutenant.
Oh, yeah.
I will say this. I really like that the doctor specifically named PTSD. Like,
why? Explain your reasoning.
We've had a lot of characters go through what is clearly identifiable as PTSD syndromes, right? Symptoms. Mm-hmm. Especially in, like, First Gundam, we even talked about it, when Amuro has his flashbacks, night terrors, shaking. Like, all of this stuff, we've seen it in a lot of these shows where characters experience what is essentially PTSD because of their combat experience. But never do they say, hey, you have a condition called PTSD that can be treated with therapy and with medicine, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like that they acknowledge it like we would in a 21st century society. Is like, this is not a random thing happening to you. This is an actual, like, thing that can be understood. I like that. I think it's a little more sensitive, and it sets things up in a better way. It treats the characters more like humans.
Yeah. Does it ground it? I was going to say, does it, like, makes, okay. And I wonder if, because there's legitimately a long time between this and, like, say, original Gundam. I wonder,
yeah, I mean, 40 years.
If that is an author choice to, like, leave that out, or if it literally, like, because I don't want to talk bad about Japan, but I know that they have a lacking of mental health. I don't know what you would say, like, recognition. Like,
yeah,
they don't. I don't want to speak for the whole country, but it's like it appears that in Japan, they don't take mental health crises as serious as they do in, like, other countries,
or they're not treated as diseases.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So,
because in America, I'm wondering
if this is because of that. Like, I don't know.
Well, how so PTSD, but even in America, was known obviously in the 70s, but.
Yeah,
I think it's gained a lot more cultural prominence. People know more about it just offhand now in, like, more recent decades. I think generally in mental health awareness as a concept in the United States has become much, you know, broader to the point where, you know, schools and jobs, occupations and workplaces will be like, hey, do you have anxiety? Do you have depression? Here's, like, things you can do. They acknowledge them as, like, core concepts that can happen to anyone. So they've become mainstreamed in a way that was not the case in the 70s in America or in Japan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think so that it may be a reaction to Gundam or into shows like it, that in this show they say, we're going to have these characters go through something similar, but we're going to treat it realistically, like we're trying to treat everything realistically. Like, we have our fights realistically and our military command structure realistically. If a doctor is there and someone is like, having flashbacks and terrors and passing out, they're going to say, this is like PTSD.
Yeah, they will say that.
And I like that they really like go for that, that this is something that they think about. I think it's interesting to do exposure therapy as a plot device. It makes sense. Exposure therapy is real.
Oh, is it?
People do it. Not everyone does it. Not everyone believes it helps, you know, and it depends on the person what helps for you, because sometimes it makes things worse.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like,
because your instinct really is to be like, doesn't that sound terrible? Yeah. It certainly didn't help Marito very much here. Yeah. Oh, by the way, this doctor breaks a lot of HIPAA laws when he just hands the recording of that session over to that lady.
Oh, yeah. He's like, hey, that's, by the
that's
way,
mean.
Check
that's
out,
not okay.
Check out this. Like, what?
Like, I get why he did it, because he wanted to repair their relationship, but let them do that on their own terms. Don't leak your therapy sessions to this lady.
It's really messed up.
So I like what Marito does for the story too, because he shows us the perspective of like average Earthlings and how like scary Martians would be to them.
Oh,
especially
yeah.
before the development of Earthling cataphracts. But I don't know. I think it took a little too much time, and I really don't like the subplot with the ship captain being his friend's daughter.
I think that's dumb too. And it doesn't do anything in this season.
It doesn't go anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so what was the point? I mean, again, maybe something will happen next season, but like,
I don't know. Whatever. I think if you're going to, like, one, it's way too much of a coincidence sort of thing, right? It's, like, yeah. So soapy to be like, he was my father. Or brother? I forget. Was he her brother?
It was her older brother.
Her older brother. I think that was way too soapy. And it didn't go anywhere. Like, it didn't create real tension between them. It never affected the story. She just said it once. He was like, uh-oh. And then they solved it.
Yeah. I think my final piece on this is I'm coming around a little bit to it. Because remember last week, I was like, Marito's so annoying. His stupid PTSD is just so annoying. But when they showed what happened to him, I was like, okay, I get it. He's like that dude's like caught in the tank and he's on fire. And he's like, shoot me. And I'm like, okay, that's horrific. I understand.
That's terrifying.
It's,
yeah.
It's
no,
awful.
I totally buy his character as like a complete character.
Yeah.
So well done. He just had nothing to do with the story.
He just didn't do anything.
All right, next up, let's talk about, there's a couple betrayals here, maybe a couple plot. We didn't have a good category for this.
Something happened.
All right, this is the slain zone. We're temporarily entering the slain zone.
Welcome
we'll come
to
back
the
to the slain
zone
later. So do you remember last week when I said that Slain was my favorite character because he felt like the one with the most dramatic potential?
Did you 180 on that one, Ian?
I hate Slain.
hear me out. Does Slain have the least amount of lines in the entire show? I feel like
of
he
the
just
major
is,
characters, 100% Slain says the least amount of stuff.
He's just places, and people talk at him, or people shoot at him, and he just that's it. Like he doesn't say.
Are we counting moans of pain? Because that might increase his.
Oh yeah,
lines.
He screams a lot.
So first, I do like that. So Slain helps Inaho defeat this Martian lady in episode 7.
Yeah,
can't be bothered to remember the name of her or her cataphract. I do like that. Slain really bungles this social interaction with Inaho.
Yeah.
Like, there are a couple ways this could have gone. And I think maybe this is about Slain's pride, where Slain is just like, are you exploiting a Salem? If he had just been like, I surrender, like, take me captive, I want to see a Salem, like that sort of thing, I think it would have been fine. But the way he refuses to cede the power in this relationship, he's like, no, I need to protect a Salem. How are you mistreating her? And that causes Inaho to mistrust him. Fairly, yeah. I think. So it annoyed me in the moment where I was like, oh my God, are you serious? They aren't actually linking up. They're like bouncing off each other. But I think it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything to say about this or should I keep going?
No. I thought you were going to continue until I saw you pick up your glass. It was already too late.
Yeah, I don't know. It's annoying that Slain can't express himself well enough to be like, no, I'm not trying to capture her for the Martians or whatever. I'm like her friend.
Yeah.
But it also sort of does track with his character that he sucks at that sort of thing.
He's a young teenage boy.
Yeah.
He's awkward.
I think what really grates is just that like it feels like the season kept going on a technicality.
Yeah.
It would be one thing if Slain made a very conscious decision to be like, I refuse to help you with a Salem. But instead, it feels kind of like an accident that had to happen to keep the plot moving.
Yeah, like, it kind of makes sense. Like, he's talking to someone he doesn't know if he can really trust. if he had a stronger will to be like, you're right, like, oh, I surrender, then obviously this would be completely different. Or if he was like, I'm going to go down there and shoot you up because you have captured my, you know.
Yeah.
Girlfriend. Then, yeah, again, similar, different situation. Like, he probably, well, actually, no, probably would have been the same situation. Because he would have got shot down and then picked up by Krutea, but.
But instead, Slane manages to pick the combination of words that make him seem the most suspicious.
And are you Inaho is a paranoid is person. Using her? Abusing her?
Exploiting, I believe.
Her. Just like, what does that even mean?
Inaho is a paranoid person to begin with, you know.
Yeah,
he has to be. I don't know. I just find this to be a very frustrating interaction. I think it makes sense. It just felt, like they could have written it in a way that made it seem less arbitrary.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That feels like the pivotal moment of the show. You know, maybe that's the moral, is that there's no trust. If there was more trust between Earthlings and Martians, this whole conflict could have been avoided.
You know what? Dang, Ian, I think you got it, man.
Yeah. So then Slane gets captured.
Yes.
He gets tortured. This Krutea is pretty intense, whips too. Him a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And he also whips apart his chair, which I was like, damn.
Oh,
drama queen.
I loved how I got sent to the Castlevania zone for a second there, right? he has his staff. Or maybe this is more like Bloodborne. He has his staff, and it turns into a whip. And he's wearing, of course, like a feudal whatever. And it's like, I'm like, is this a hidden Belmont I don't know about? By the way, this scene.
Totally forgot about this. There's a scene where Riot just like lists everything wrong with Martians. And part of it was like, why did they adopt this highly backward feudal society?
Riot,
you're 100% correct about all of this. So he's torturing Slane. Slane won't say anything because he thinks Krutea is the one who's trying to kill Asylum.
Yeah.
So he doesn't want to give away where she is. 100% makes sense to me. Eventually he's like, haha, you said you're loyal, but you're not because you're trying to kill Asylum. And Krutea sort of trusts him for some reason. They get proof that an Aldoa drive was activated, which counts, you know, as proof that Asylum is alive.
Yeah.
So he starts believing him. So he gets a little bit of a face turn here. He's like, we've got to stop this war. It maybe lasts 4 minutes, but...
No, I do like how there's like, that is such a, oh my God, this is what the plot is going to become moment. It's such like, it seems like it's such a turning point, right? But it's not.
Yes.
Because you're like, Count Krutea is going to be like, lead the civil war with him and Slane and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that doesn't happen at all.
What I like too is Krutea realizes Slane, he's like, oh my God, he left alone to protect the princess because he couldn't trust us. He was hunting. He's like talking about all these incredible things Slane did, right? And he's like, but he never gives Slane any credit. He never says like, Slane, you're noble, you're a true servant of the empire or anything like that, right? He's basically still dismissive of Slane. He's like, someone treat this guy's wounds. And it's like, they're wounds you gave him. But he's still like, Krutea is still so far above Slane that he doesn't see him, even after this revelation, as like a real human.
Also, if you were to whip someone with a bullwhip like that, they would be dead.
After beating and electrocuting him for like 2 days?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that, though. I like that Krutea is still like terrible.
Yes.
They don't ever try. I was really worried that they were going to like, he was going to ally with Slane and he'd be like, you know what, Slane, I was wrong about Earthlings or something, right?
Yeah.
After he wiped out all of New Orleans or whatever.
So I actually misremembered the sequence entirely, which is funny that you mentioned that the way this is, because in my brain before we watched this, I thought I remembered this being a much more drawn out thing. I felt like this was an entire episode of him being like, Slane, I'm so sorry, like, blah, 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 blah.
No, it's like a minute.
Yeah. And no, and then when I watched it again, I was like, that's what I remembered. Like, that's what I extrapolated from
those events,
which I thought was funny.
So, yeah, he's like, he's talking about, and then, yeah, that's when he gets annihilated by the beam saber.
Yeah.
Is Sazbom real? Because Sazbom was on the video call with him when he realized, essentially. It was what?
They were zooming.
Yeah, they were zooming when they got the news about the old Noah drive. So he was like immediately like, oh, shoot, I got to get over there. So I imagine Sazbom like running down the hall to get his cataphract.
Get my mech ready. And he's like, he gets it. Thankfully, he has a mech that transforms into a jet, right? So it all works.
He's got
out.
The Zeta Gundam cataphract. Oh, no, I have opinions about Sazbom's cataphract that we will get to momentarily.
Yeah.
But I think that they handled the Crudeo stuff essentially as perfectly as they could have. That was probably my favorite sequence, just in terms of how it was done. It felt like real. It felt compelling. Let's talk about Sazbomb, since we're right here.
Let's talk about our boy.
He's our antagonist, right? We finally have, like, a clearly identified... He was the one behind the plot.
Yeah, we kind of knew it was him, right? With him and Trillrum last episode.
He wasn't much of a character, because he was just sort of always in the background of video calls or something.
Yeah, and now we're like, oh, okay, he is the one who formulated the entire assassination plot, and seemingly there's a lot more than that, because people on the moon base are also
he's clearly got some sort of coup going almost.
Yeah,
because also all of his soldiers, this was a moment that struck me as funny, they're invading and they go, find and kill the princess, and I'm like, that's your princess. He somehow got a castle full of true believers, right? Like,
I guess that makes sense, though, in a feudal system. Like, that's the way the loyalties go.
Yeah, they have loyalty first to their immediate lord and not to the king, which is why the feudal system was sort of abolished as monarchical powers increased, right? Because they didn't like the idea that their vassals had great standing armies that weren't loyal to the empire first.
Yeah, this is like the whole plot of Game of Thrones, right?
Right. So I just love that, like, they're not even, like, reluctant about it or on the DL where they're like, dirty work. They're just like, let's kill Princess Azalea.
They're like wearing their uniforms with their submachine guns, just hunting her down.
I was like, wow, they're really on the nose, these folks.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I like him. He's definitely menacing. I like how his first in-person appearance is him just blowing up Crudeo. That sets him off as, like, a real threat in the show.
So he grabs Slain in the hand of his mech and
for wholly arbitrary reasons, by the
way. Somehow, like, flies into... Wait, was he in orbit before this, or was he... I don't get it.
No, because Crudeo was on the ground, I thought.
No, Crudeo was on the ground. But how does he take Slain in the hand of his mobile suit
and fly into
space?
He picks up... What's wild to me is he picks up Slain and then he transforms.
Yeah.
I would not trust having a squishy human on a transforming mobile suit like that, right? Like, imagine if the Zeta were holding someone and then tried to transform. They definitely get squished.
Oh, they would get obliterated. I again, this is a suspension of disbelief. I just think it's hilarious.
That jumped out to me right away.
And then flies to space.
Yeah.
I don't think that's...
Maybe his cataphract has a built-in brig because it's so big.
Maybe. But yeah, so then we go up to space. Zazbomb's like, listen, Slain, I owe your dad a great debt. All right, he saved me.
I'm never going to explain what this debt is.
He references it like 20 times. No idea what's happening. But he does treat Slain very much like...
A human.
And not in like the racist way.
He gives him like nice food and stuff. Yeah.
As like a real person. Because they treat humans badly. Terrans or whatever.
Chujins.
Whatever. But then, sorry, during this, he's like, all right, let me explain my backstory. Because, of course, up until this point, we're like, I don't know why he's doing any of this. And it turns out that Sazbomb and his fiance, which, that's unlucky. You're fighting a war with your fiance. That never ends well.
That's a warning sign.
Yeah, that's just like, something bad's going to happen here. They were on Tanegashima Island. When Heaven's Fall occurred, right? Is that Heaven's Fall?
Heaven's Fall is when the moon blew up. Okay, well, he tells us really what it is. He's like, Mars was in a bad way. Because Mars, unlike Earth, is Mars, right? They've got nothing up there. Except for their fancy weapons.
They're in dirt.
So he's like, so the Empire, rather than focus on... you know, improving the world, just stirred up resentment towards Earth to justify an invasion of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to invade Earth. They all come through the gateway on the moon. And him and his wife were sent as like a expeditionary force to scout out the resistance.
Yep.
And they're like, wow, we're going to crush humans because they've just got tanks. And they've just there's that one guy shooting his friend. And
they're annihilating everyone.
And he's in the air and she's on the ground, right? Her cataphract has like gravity control and he's his flies. That's why they were picked, is because they can both fly easily in and out of the atmosphere. Then something, asterisk, like footnote, whatever, happens on the moon and the gate overloads and the moon explodes.
Yes.
The explosion means that she can't use her gravity powers to escape, and she gets crushed by the falling moon rock, and he escapes. It's very important to note that even after this explanation, we still never learn what caused the moon to blow up.
That's right? Yes, that's a good point. Which
I think I have a feeling this will come into play later, but because there may be some fatal flaw to the Eldenoa drives we aren't aware of, or someone to blame for this. But in any case, what I do, all of that makes perfect sense to me. It actually answers a lot of the questions we had last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it also hints at the existence of the second emperor. Do you remember, when we were talking about the first emperor?
The missing emperor.
Yeah, the old guy was the first guy to use the Eldenoa drives, which is like the source of most of our beef with this premise. And we were like, where's the middle guy? Because why is the oldest guy an emperor? How does he have a granddaughter but not a kid to be emperor or empress? So now we know that something that guy ran this terrible plan. Maybe he was on the moon when it blew up. I don't think we know for certain. But it fills in things a lot. I really liked that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, does this really explain his motivation?
Like, I understand what he's getting at, where he's like, this government's corrupt, they're authoritative, like, they're just trying to...
They're hurting the people of Mars.
Yeah, and I get that. I think the problem that we start to see is, then why is he attacking Earth?
Yeah, so... A couple things make sense to me. He hates the royal family or whatever, right?
Yeah, sure.
That tracks. Totally makes he wants sense. To kill Asalem because she's part of the family. You know, clearly she doesn't deserve it, but it makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. You're trying to hurt the emperor and wipe out his family. But he also wants to destroy Earth? Does he just, like, want to conquer Earth to give the resources on Earth to Mars so that Martians can just move to Earth?
I don't know, and we'll never know because he's dead. What he really was after, maybe there's a reason why he couldn't just go fight the Martians, because like maybe like the emperor could just turn off his Eldenoa drive, you know?
Yeah,
like I don't know, but you're right, it's like a little awkward. That being said, Sazbomb does never really like explicitly attack the Earthlings without trying to kill Asalem as the main goal,
but he did kill Asalem to orchestrate the invasion of Earth, right? He still led to that and encouraged it and told people to do it. And if he hadn't done it in that way, say he had blown up Asalem's ship when she was traveling to Earth, right?
Oh, but he couldn't kill Asalem because she was in Kruteo's...
Castle.
Right? So he had to wait till she was somewhere else.
He went very far out of his way to frame the Earthlings. Because he wanted this conflict to start, right?
Yeah.
So clearly he wants to do something to Earth, and he never attempted to stop this war, right? But I don't really understand why. I think it might be just jealousy of Earth or a desire to make the Martian life better.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem like he's as much of a racist as Crudeo is, right? It doesn't seem like he thinks Earthlings are, like, terribly inferior. But I just don't really understand what his plan was. All right, so let's say everything went according to plan.
Sure.
Asalem dies in the motorcade. The Orbital Knights invade Earth, and they easily conquer the planet, right?
Yeah.
What is his next step? Do all the Martians come to Earth? Then does he try to kill the Emperor? Like, what's his goal here?
I wonder if...
How does this help you get revenge your wife?
It's speculating, right? He has people on the moon base. Let's say he owns the moon base as well. He gets everyone to land on Earth, and he just goes, listen, everyone, why are we helping the Martians back on Mars? Like, why don't we just
Earth now,
stay
right
here? Like, I could see him do that, like, something along the lines of just kind of, like, getting rid of the old guard and starting anew, but I don't know. And
for what annoys me is he's like, they really wanted us to conquer Earth, right? They wouldn't solve problems. And so he says, the way I'm going to get back at them for only caring about conquering Earth is by conquering Earth. How does giving into what they want, like, put it to the Imperial family? And at one point he says, I am going to break the cycle of hatred.
Yeah.
What? I think his plan was break the cycle of hatred by killing all Earthlings so that there was nothing left to cycle. But, like, I don't know. Nothing about that made sense to me.
As our Echo Os guy in Gundam Unicorn would say, he's just a cog in the machine.
Oh, D, right? The guy, his name starts with a D. He's the, yeah. Anyway.
That's why I said Echo Oscar. I don't know.
Giles Deleuze. That's who said it. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Do you have anything else you want to say about Sazbaum?
No. I think great. I'm good.
Real quick before we get to the ending. We talked a lot of that last week, how I liked the fights. They really slow down the pace, right? There's only like 1.5 fights in these 6 episodes.
I don't want to say we were in the desert in a 12 episode show and like literally the desert was only 2 episodes, but it felt like we were in the desert because, well, we were in the tundra, which is like a frosty desert, right? I think we made that joke before. But yeah. Like, yeah, so we finished the fight, the single molecule punching lady.
So stupid. And
then it's like literally, it is literally 2 episodes of them on the ship going to Russia. And of course, like, Asylum dies, air quotes, dies.
Yeah, they're on their way to Jaburo.
And it's like, this is just an exposition dump of 2 episodes, right? Because that's where we learn about Slane getting tortured and blah, 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 blah.
And then that's where we learn about Sazbaum.
Everything.
Yeah, it is a lot of exposition all at once.
But it's just that. Like, we don't have any fights, which is really weird for a show that every episode we get a fight in.
We get flashbacks to Earth, you know, to the Deucalion. You're right. I did not feel like it was the desert because I was interested in what was being revealed. I felt like it was answering longstanding questions that I cared about the answer to.
Yeah.
And I thought the Salem murder attempt was interesting. So I didn't dislike it, but you're right that there really isn't any action for a while.
Just nothing happens.
Which is a rough adjustment from a show whose best quality was, I think, its fights. I did not like the punching lady fight. I thought like the resolution of it was not very compelling. Her getting rammed by the ship was, but I meant like everything leading up to that was
I like
how
she
fun.
Turns into the fist at the end though. That was like, that's kind of hilarious.
Logan. Yeah.
Like they destroy all of it and she's like, now I am the fist. It's like,
and
oh
then
God.
The other major fight is Sazbaum versus Inaho. I could do this in the mech corner, but I think I have to talk about it now. I hate with all of my being that Sazbaum, all of the cataphracts, right, have had a unique concept.
Yeah.
They've got, one of them has armor, one of them has beam sabers, one of them has punchy punchy fists, one of them has anti-gravity. Sazbaum's ability is that he's got all of the above. He's got the beam sabers, he's got the ability to separate his fists, and he's got dimensional armor. And he can fly, he's a Zeta Gundam.
All of them are better than the originals, too. Like, his fists are literally, like, AI mechs.
Yes, that can fight independently and then relink with him.
I was like, what the heck? What the heck was that?
Yeah, his beam saber, I don't know if it's much better, but,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, but it's the same.
The dimensional armor, but it feels redundant to have the dimensional armor.
Yeah.
I don't know, I just felt like this was dumb. It had a psycho... 2-minute transformation sequence or whatever, really long, not 2 minutes, but like a minute, when the arms rejoined with him, and I was like, what show are we watching? Why is there this like super robot sequence?
That being said, sorry, I'm gonna backtrack a little. I really liked the battle up until this point. I liked like the orbital drop where they're like dropping in and like the one girl's scared she's gonna get hit by the flak.
Oh yeah, them having to do this like para landing is really good.
And I loved the twist where they land, they destroy all the anti-air guns, and they're like, where's the Martian cataphract? And then it's just in space, and it's like, I found you. And it's like destroying the Deucalion. I'm like, that's actually really
funny. They have to crash land. Really good. I like that a lot.
I liked up until that point, yeah.
It felt like an interesting battle. I just really didn't like the way that ended. And then he just sort of was like, oh, I can just repeat the lessons I learned earlier to kill this guy now. And it just did not feel as interesting because it was just a rehash. And then, of course, Slane interferes. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about the ending.
Let's talk about the ending.
We're back in the Slane zone, baby. Slane, what is your plan?
I think he's just a lost child, right? He has no father figure anymore. They both died. Well, one died and his new one's like kind of a bad guy. I think he's just like literally lost, right? He has no idea what he's doing.
What is wild to me though is that for the first 10 or 11 episodes of the show, Slane had a single motivation: protect the princess, right? I'm friends with the princess. I want to protect the princess. Sazbomb sits him down over steak and wine and says, by the way, I'm trying to kill the princess. I attempted to kill her. I'm going to continue to try to kill her. I cannot wait to kill her.
Actually, can we pause? Can we pause for a second?
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious how Sazbomb's like, this is a delicacy that the Terrans eat. And Sling goes, this is just chicken.
Yeah.
You remember this scene?
He's like, we were insulted that they sent it to us as emergency rations. And Slade's like, they have billions of these.
Yeah, it's like, this is like...
It's low quality.
Like that, you know those MREs where you like pour water in and you sit for a second, then you open it. It's like that. And he's just like, "What?" I love that.
That was great. Sorry. That was a good moment of perspective though on how terrible things must be on Mars.
Yeah. Anyhow, sorry.
So Sazbomb is like, "I'm totally gonna kill the princess."
Yeah.
And Slane is like, "Okay." Sazbomb's like, "By the way, here's a cataphract. You can use it." Either run away or fight with me. I don't care which.
Yes.
Like, also makes sense because Sazbomb is like washing his hands of Slane. He's basically
he's
like,
honorable.
No matter what
Get
happens, it's over, right? So he sit. Then he's like, I'm gonna go save Sazbomb's life. The guy who's trying to kill the princess. I'm gonna save him from the one person I know who's trying to protect the princess. Or maybe does he still think Inaho was exploiting her? But he couldn't have believed that,
that
afterwards when a Salem runs over to him and is like, I need to save you.
Oh, Slane.
So as a result, Sazbomb does what Sazbomb has been promising to do for the last four episodes. He's made himself extremely clear on this point.
I'm going to shoot her.
And he does. Like no
two
one's
or three times.
Slane's.
Can we talk about how unbelievably visceral that scene is?
Yeah, she gets shot in the shoulder, and you're like, oh, she's totally going to make it. That's an anime survivable wound. And then she gets shot in the head.
Dude, right? That was like, when I first watched that, I was like, that's like a gut punch to me. I was like, oh, what? Like, it was really well shot.
Yeah, I was shocked.
I was good.
So then, Slane does what's very normal and shoots Sazbomb like four times.
Yes, hysterically.
Yeah. It's like, who could have seen this coming, Slane? Maybe it's that this guy told you this is what was going to happen ahead of time, and you were like, better save his life. And then Inaho is there, and they acknowledge that they know who each other are. Inaho's crawling to a Salem, and he draws a gun, and Slane shoots him in the head.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, I get why. He's drawing a gun, but like, why is this what's happening here?
Well, remember first... Slane is pointing the gun at Inaho. So
yes, that's right. Yeah. So
that is the part where I don't really understand. I mean, again, they don't trust each other, but
I just feel like his priorities should be different here. Is he jealous of the way a Salem reacted to Inaho's injuries earlier? Is he afraid? I think he's just confused.
Can I tangent for a second?
You're
going to have no idea what I'm saying. So this is going to be for any random anime listeners. There is a show called Nobunaga the Fool. I had the unfortunateness to watch around the same time period because for some reason I was watching a lot of mecha anime. And it's about Nobunaga, the like Japanese
Oda Nobunaga
feudal lord, reuniting Japan. But in this universe, there are mechs and also Holy Grail Knights. And long story short, there is a part where Nobunaga has like a sister or something, and Hideyoshi, the guy who betrays Nobunaga, likes his sister, but his sister has to be wed to Caesar, like the Roman Caesar, because they have to ally in a war to get supplies.
These timelines don't make any sense.
To fight in Japan. I get it, right? But long story short, the end of the show, spoilers for the show, is that Hideyoshi loves his Nobunaga's sister, but Nobunaga's sister falls in love with Caesar, and she does the same thing, where, like, Caesar's dying, and she's, like, crawling over to Caesar's body, and she's like, I actually love you, Caesar. And Hideyoshi, who loved her, was like, oh, you love him instead of me? And then he, like, kills her as well, because he betrays Nobunaga, right, in the real history and also in the show. And it's like literally the exact same scene as what we're seeing, where you go, why would you do that? Like, why is it like, it must be jealousy. Like, this must be a trope is what I'm getting at, that we are not too experienced with. So, and actually, you know what? I think jealousy is actually a big anime trope, because there's also a show called School Days. No, I'm not going to go into it. But yeah, you see that a lot where in like weird anime, like people will like get so hysterically jealous that they'll murder someone, right? I think that's like a trope.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know. Slane was so interesting because he was situated at like the precipice of these two ideas. He had a clear agenda he was trying to enact on his own. He was defecting and flying places and fighting. And then in the second half of the season, he just does nothing. He just sort of lets things flow around him and just does whatever the person nearest to him wants.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, he's like not a character by the end of this. He doesn't have anything he believes in. And it's not like it was taken from him, right? It'd be one thing if ahead of this scene, he had decided to ally with Sazbomb because he like felt betrayed by Asylum. But that's not the case. He's still actively trying to save Asylum as his primary objective. So they just sort of forgot about it for a yeah. couple episodes. And he just sort of lets these things happen.
Infuriating. Like, I feel like we have these blank slate characters. That's like very like
blank slates.
Mid-2010s, right? Where it's like...
Yeah.
Things just happen. I think of Kirito from Sword Art when I think of like the most blank slate character of all time, right? Well, it's like very reminiscent of that.
The trope with like the isekai shows, incoming email, Sword Art Online is technically not an isekai,
yeah.
But is that the protagonist is always the most blank slate possible, is the most so that the reader always feels like they're the protagonist. Because mm-hmm. if they have a strong personal conviction and character arc, that makes them a unique character. But if they are nothing, then they become you, and you can live that power fantasy yourself.
It's like, yeah.
In some ways, that's what Inaho feels like at times, because Inaho is just a nothing character for a lot of this show.
Mm-hmm.
And Slane was interesting because he wasn't like that. And then he sort of just becomes this dude who does stuff for no reason by the end of it.
Yep.
All right, so... The way this ends, I'll talk probably a little bit about what I think might be coming. Inaho is, and Asylum and Sazbomb are all quote-unquote dead, right? They've all been shot multiple times in this scene. I have to confess that I have seen the cover image for season 2, and Inaho is on it.
Does he have a cool eye patch?
I couldn't see close enough. I just know that Inaho is like one of the characters standing dramatically there.
Because
so.
I believe he gets like shot in the eye, and I think like, again... This is very rare when it does happen, but you can get shot in the face and live.
I will be annoyed if both him and Asylum live being shot in the face, that it's like, wow, does your amazing cliffhanger ending mean nothing?
Yeah.
I highly suspect Sazbomb is dead just because I don't know what role he could possibly serve.
Yeah, I feel like they're going to go put an end to the Martian Empire next, right? That's like clearly the stepping stone or something.
My thought is that Slane took Asylum's body and left, right? Because he's probably still focused on her, and he's the only one left standing by the end of it. And we know that he can start all Noah drives for some reason.
Yeah.
So he could totally have done that, just taken her and flown away. Inaho probably gets rescued by the UFE at some point here. I don't know if Asylum's alive. I think Sazbomb's probably dead. I imagine that Slane goes full Martian now and like tries to do something with Asylum, like... protect her. I don't know if she's alive. He's like, I'm gonna be a Martian, I'm gonna save you, Asylum, and protect you. Or like, he just wants deranged revenge on Earth for killing her, even though it was technically the Martians that did it.
Yeah.
And even though it was technically the guy who he saved. That's my feeling. I think you're right that this has to extend upwards more, and I'm really hoping we get some more stuff about this moonfall thing,
like, yeah, what broke and the moon. Like the fact that like we got the Deucalion. And it really didn't do anything. Right. I mean,
it was nice, though. They rammed it into the thing and it let them fly around in a way that they could.
But that's what's like, okay. I feel like there's going to be more, right? We got the flagship. Like, are they going to get a new flagship? Like, so I think like the Deucalion will be like, oh, we can go into space, right?
The Deucalion Mark II. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't know. This was a great way to end the season just in terms of like shockingness. I think the shocking aspect of it maybe doesn't hold up on close inspection.
Yeah.
But it was definitely an impactful ending. I don't think I'm likely to forget.
For sure.
More than I can say about other 12-episode shows we've watched, like Buddy Complex.
Yeah. Like, I also think this is like one of those shows where if you're one of those people who watches anime and you watch like three, you pick like three shows a season to watch. And if you watch this and just like let it hit you and don't think about it too hard, I can see how you can be like, oh, I'm so excited for the next season, right?
Yeah.
But if you're like really invested,
you want to know what's going on.
Yeah. If you're like really invested like us and you're like really thinking about and talking about it. Yeah. You can see where things like kind of don't line up quite properly, but it's like, oh, if you're just taking this kind of at face value, it's like a pretty intense, watchable show that can be like really suspenseful and dramatic. So,
let's see. So yeah, Slane's going to go full Riddy.
Punished.
Yeah. Make that joke many more times.
Please.
Yeah, this was just okay. I don't know. I like the impact of the ending, but I just feel like these characters were so empty that it didn't mean very much.
Yeah, I kind of wish we had more of the side characters in this. We get a little bit with, like, Inaho's sister and the one girl. They have to, like, get Asylum to the Aldenoa Drive.
Yeah, but they just sort of disappear at one point. They're like, yeah, we'll hold them off, and then they're gone, right?
Exactly. Like, I wish we would have had a little bit more of everyone, right? Because it's the quote-unquote final battle, right? So like, why is Marito like not really doing anything?
And he's a character we've gotten good meaningful development on,
and so it's stuff like that where I wish like we get, like, with Edel Rizzo and Rae, we actually get a little bit of that, right? Like, they're on the ground doing stuff, but we don't get
Edel Rizzo driving that Jeep and she looks like she's 10 is pretty funny though.
I like when she gets out and she puts her hands up and tons of Martians around her.
There's like 10 dudes with guns pointed at her. She's like this tiny girl.
They're probably like, what the heck?
She can like do karate, right? Doesn't she like flip someone around at one point? Or is that
No, that's
is that the princess? Okay.
I don't think Edo Ritsu is literally useless.
Yeah. Let's get into our mech corner here.
Sure.
Let's start with Deucalion the mech. It's like a tripod, right?
Yeah, it has like legs.
Sorry, I'm trying to find an image of it because the wiki has a page for it, but not an image of it. All right, here we go. It's kind of like that wing image, not wing. The way its shoulders go out, Sazabi maybe.
Oh, like a Kublai?
Yeah, it's like a Kublai Sazabi though.
But no, but I agree. It's got like the Sazabi shape.
It's got a tripod situation, and it's sort of got anti-gravity. We don't see it in action too much. It's tall and imposing, which is all it needs to be for like.
But it doesn't like have mech appendages, right? I think is the takeaway.
No, it does not have like hands. Mech. Yeah. Then there's the Deucalion. The Deucalion is the ship version. It just looks like a big fancy ship. It's got a red like a sub portion. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That bulges out, and it's got a long nose, like those sharks.
Like those sharks
with long noses.
And this is the Aldenoa Drive stripped from the Deucalion mech.
Yes.
Put into this. And I guess, here's the thing I wonder. Was this made by the UFE?
I think it was.
Like, they made it, and then they went, oh, crap, we can't activate the Aldenoa Drive.
Yeah, that's
and
not how you
it.
Would do things normally, right? You would see if you can turn on the Aldenoa Drive before you put it in a custom battleship.
You know what? I actually don't understand any of it now. Because one girl, like, turns it on, she goes, I don't understand how any of this works. So it's, like, clearly Aldenoa tech still? Like, how would you make it without knowing that? Like, I don't... All right, let's not think about it too hard. But, yeah, it's Aldenoa Drive.
Okay, wait. I'm reading the wiki page.
Oh, no. Ian can't let it go. He's on the warpath.
I guess it came to Earth with the Martians.
Okay, that makes more sense.
I don't understand it either, though.
So they just have the same name. Whatever.
Yeah.
Why not?
Okay, so next up is this... let's do the Tarsus. This is the one that gets given to Slane here at the end. It doesn't see much action. He basically gets in it, tackles Inaho, and calls it a day. It's maybe the most Gundam-like we've seen so far,
yes.
Right? It's a white and yellow and black color scheme. It's got what looks like a V-fin situation. It's got this like blue streaking movement effect, yellow feet, and it's got like Kublai-style shield shoulders. Love the Kublai in this one, huh?
It's definitely like going to be an iconic thing for season 2.
Oh yeah, okay.
Oh, well, no, I that's like my speculation.
Oh, it's going to turn up in season two?
Yeah, because like it's like why would they introduce it at like the second to last episode and like barely show it, right? And it's in perfect working condition. Like, it doesn't get destroyed or anything, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's totally fine. He flies away in it, I think. So then there's the Dioscuria, which is this annoying cataphract that Sazbomb has that is the one that has all powers at once.
And it's like black and purple?
Black and red.
Which is like the most like, this is the bad guy mobile suit, right? Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's got its you know, its separated form, though. Its arms that are like autonomous robots are kind of like Bound Docks. They've got the big skirt and like tall heads.
Yeah, those are cool looking.
They're neat looking.
When they showed that at first, I was like, wait, what is this? I was like, is this like what the Martian grunt cataphracts are? Because I kind of forgot. And I was like, oh, no, they're just part of his cataphract.
Yeah. Who designed the Bound Dock? I'm trying to remember. Kobayashi, he's not on this show, I don't believe. I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't. I like read a Twitter thread about how the guy who invented the Bound Dock keeps putting it in different shows.
Oh, really?
Like, it was started in like just like doujin and like magazines he made where he would like draw the Bound Dock, and then he put it in Gundam, and then he just keeps reiterating on the Bound Dock and putting it in other shows.
That's hilarious.
I like respect someone who loves their own design that much. Yeah, this thing confidence. Is so evil looking. It sucks, and its powers are boring. And yeah. It's got that insane transformation sequence that I hate. This isn't Getter where the transformation sequences rule. This is just unnecessary. All right. Anything else you want to say on these cataphracts here?
No.
Yeah.
It's like, all this right. Is like, yeah, they're fine. I don't like them. I don't hate them.
Dan, what are your final thoughts?
Final thoughts. I love the ending. I think that the way it ends is so atypical of anything I typically watch. So it's like really like super shocking. And if you are listening to this and haven't seen it, then you will not get the same experience. So it's really good to go into this like raw and like completely not knowing, because just watching that ending scene is like really cool. That being said, I thought it was fine. I thought this was like a perfectly watchable good season one. I'm excited for season two because, again, as we said, this doesn't answer anything. It's like this is such a clearly like necessary season two that yes. Season one by itself could never hold up because it just ends like in the middle of what is seemingly a huge war. So I'm excited to see what happens in season two and how they're going to resolve it. What about you, Ian?
I think my overall thoughts are actually colored by a DM we got after last week, which they say that it was VI, who writes in a lot, said that Urobuchi wrote the first three episodes and provided an outline for the rest of the show. I don't think I have any beef with this broad strokes plot. I think the way this ends is very interesting. I think the problem is convincing us of how it got there. And the individual episode writing is what was the problem, because we didn't understand Slane's motivations. We didn't believe that he was making choices. We didn't understand Sazbomb's motivations.
Yeah.
I think that where it ends up in is a place that could be explained if the characters were competently developed. So I was really shocked and excited by the ending, but the more I think about it, the less I'm happy about it. And it does lose the high energy fights and like the cleverness that kept the show going for so long.
Sure.
In that first half of the season. I do want to see season two. I'm really hoping it's not like a 00 season two situation where it just really fails to deliver on the promises it's making. All right.
So, hold on a second. You know how I feel about 00. You can't just bring that in here.
But I don't know. We'll see where this goes, right? I'm willing to see what happens.
Slane and Ino are gonna duke it out, right?
Oh yeah,
they're gonna have to fight.
I think that's a good idea. I think this is all well, like the outline is great, because it's like, oh, Slane and Ino could have been good friends, but now they're destined to be enemies.
They have to fight.
It's this Amuro and Char thing, except that we didn't provide any explanation for why they think or act this way.
Yes. But here's the thing, though. Now that these characters have more backstory, do you think that they're going to be less of blank slate characters in season two? I think Inoha will be a blank slate, but I think Slane's going to have a lot more.
Inoha doesn't get character development, partially because Inoha doesn't need character development.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're right. I'm hoping that we get some more meat here, but I'm also worried they're going to do the season two thing where they introduce like 10 new characters as a way of keeping the plot going. And then we're not going to get any time working on our other characters who still need development.
I'm trying to search my memory files to see if that happens, and I honestly don't remember if they introduced.
Well, Dan, you'll find out in a week.
New characters, though, right? At least a few.
Yeah, I hope so. Probably. God, they'd be really inefficient if they didn't use any of the safe characters. I mean, it would also be amazing if all three of these people were actually dead, and like Slade was the only one left from the main.
And
cast.
It's like Inoho's sister is actually punished Kaizuka or whatever her name is.
That would be a pretty good.
She's
choice,
like really angry that Inoho's not going to happen. That'd be funny.
By the way, Dan, this is just looking ahead. This is completely unrelated to the current show. SSSS Dyna Xenon is currently airing, the sequel to Gridman. So in a few weeks, when that wraps up, we are going to be able to do some real hot, fresh coverage of that show, I think.
Yeah, we can like...
The first episode just came out, so it's going to be like 10 weeks from now. But... Okay. I don't know. I'm just really excited that Dyna Xenon's airing.
So if you guys are interested in us covering that, just wait like 12 weeks and we will be able to do it.
What you should do is watch along, and right as the last episode comes out, probably our first episode covering it will come out.
Ooh. There well, how, go. It's going to be what? How long? 12 episodes?
I think so.
2 weeks?
Yeah. We'll just do it in 2 weeks.
Sounds good.
So we'll definitely cover that in a few weeks. Just letting people know that they might want to get on that train now because it's coming out right now.
Oh, man, perfect. Everyone watch it.
Yeah. I mean, if it's as good as Gridman, you should.
And if they got those Gridman honeys.
Oh, no. next week, it's Old Noah Zero Season 2. Old Noah 2, Episodes 1 through 6. For some reason, they're combined for you. I guess that's like, what, 13 through 18? 13 through 19? No, 13 through 18.
Yeah?
Whatever. Old Noah Zero Season 2, first 6 episodes. You'll know when to stop. If you want to reach out to us and explain Slane, just tell me what was going on with him in these last couple episodes, you can reach us at mechadoaboutnothing@gmail.com. That's the name of the podcast, @gmail.com. Our website is mechadoo.moe, and our Twitter account is @mechadoopodcast. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Ian.
Until next week, will you be able to survive?